Welcome to the Spingola Zone. It is Monday, July 7th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. This weekly program is sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. I have been a subscriber to the American Free Press and highly recommend a subscription to that newspaper. I also wish to commend the wonderful historical journal, The Barnes Review, whose website is barnesreview.org, and Barnes is spelled B-A-R-N-E-S, barnesreview.org. Please visit both websites, support the efforts of the people who report accurate history and contemporary events. My website is spingola.com, and we have a wonderful gentleman who has created and maintains a website called SpingolaSpeaks.wordpress.com, and he uploads all the audio files and other very interesting links, so please visit both websites. If you wish to call into the studio to ask a question or make a comment, that telephone number is 347-215-7292. Again, 347-215-7292. We will also take questions and comments from the listeners via my email, which is comment@spingola.com, or please join others in the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And just a quick note, the American Free Press is no longer going to be sponsoring a radio program, so I am looking at other options. But anyway, I will still be here, probably next week, probably at the same time, just in under a different venue. My guest today is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. He is the author of The Synagogue of Satan and In the Name of Yahweh. His website is andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Welcome, Andy.
Hi, Deanna. It's nice to do the show with you again on this new forum. The first time with yourself on AFP, it was always on RBN that I was with you before.
Exactly, and this is commercials-free, so it allows continuity without the commercial breaks, and so it is wonderful. I do really enjoy this venue. And I enjoy talking with you and reading your books. I have both the both versions of The Synagogue of Satan. And, in fact, the second one is actually called The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. So we want to make sure that people purchase those. They can get them get that one at Amazon. And I have a Kindle edition of it, which is... I really enjoy Kindle books. Okay, you've had some interesting radio programs with other hosts recently. You also had some exposure by kind of a mainstream venue. So do you want to tell us about that, please?
Yeah, it was quite strange, actually. I sent you the... I only found the link last week. The second biggest newspaper in Britain, daily newspaper, is called the Daily Mail. Some people will have seen articles with Mail Online at the top, even in America, because, you know, these links go around. And I found an article. I was just messing about on Google and things, and I can bring the article up. It was called... from the Daily Mail, so presumably this appeared in their newspaper for that day, so I have to try and get hold of that. But this was online, and it said Amazon revealed to sell Holocaust denial, anti-Semitic and white supremacist books. And then underneath, and I think that this article, what's so good about this article, it's worth reading through, because it's an expose on how the Jews tell their own story. It says underneath in mini headlines, the hate-filled literature can be bought in hard copy or paperback, as well as can be downloaded to the Kindle. This revelation comes on the heels of another revelation last week that showed the site selling bestiality, incest and rape books. The most bizarre of all the titles is a book of racist movie reviews titled The White Nationalist Guide to the Movies. So, firstly, if we go back to it, it says, this revelation comes on the heels of another revelation last week that showed the site selling bestiality, incest and rape books. So, Holocaust denial, anti-Semitic and white supremacist are in the same vein as bestiality, incest and rape. That's what
they're
saying.
Oh, my goodness.
Because, but you see, that's the way that they've done it.
Sure.
They bring that article out first and then this one, you see. And so they can associate the two. So if you have any pride in your race, if you want to question the fake collar hoax, and if you want to question the actions of Jews, then you're the same as wanting to commit incest, bestiality or rape. Anyway, the article, it says, Amazon has now been revealed to sell Holocaust denial and white supremacist literature. The online retailer has been shown to sell books denying the Holocaust and promoting anti-Semitism and the superiority of the white race with titles such as The Myth of the Extermination of the Jews and Building a Whiter and Brighter World. The books and e-books are on sale even in countries that ban such texts, according to an investigation by the Colonel, which first uncovered the hateful Holocaust denial screeds.
Wow.
It goes on. See if it's worth reading it all. I don't believe if it's too long to bore people.
No, it's okay. You haven't bored me. I think this is all very interesting.
Okay, I'll stop and comment on bits.
Yeah, please.
It said, amongst the Holocaust denial books, did 6 million really die? The preview questions the validity of claims of gas chambers and alleges many survivor stories have been made up. Well, why don't you quote them then? You know, you see, what they do is they, they're saying 6 million didn't really die. We all know that. We all know that they did. It goes on to say... e-books with titles such as Dissecting the Holocaust, The Growing Critique of Truth and Memory, The Myth of the Extermination of the Jews and the Hoax of the 20th Century, The Case Against Presumed Extermination of European Jewry populate the collection. The sole purpose of Auschwitz is to disprove the possibility that any Jewish people were ever gassed at the infamous concentration camp. Well, they weren't gassed. We've got a film, the David Cole film, a Jew questions the Holocaust, and he goes there walking around in his yarmulke, and he's on camera speaking to Francis Piper, the curator, who admits to him that the gas chambers weren't there and they were put in there by the Russians after the war.
And then
Fred Leuchter, who went over there and wrote the Leuchter Report, he was employed by Jews to go through the gas chambers. And he went there and he came back and they couldn't believe it because he told them that there wasn't any, there couldn't have been any gassings because the Prussian blue residue of burning Cyclone B, which is a delousing agent, by the way, for the benefit of the listeners, that was only found in the laundry chambers where it was used to basically delouse the clothing, etc., of
right.
the inmates.
I never found
in the so-called gas chamber at all, which had a handle on the inside of the door as well, you know. I mean,
sure.
And it wasn't airtight, all these things that just, it just goes on and on. But the point up to this point...
Let me just ask you a question. You said that Fred Leuchter had been employed by the Jews to go over there and investigate the gas chambers, but wasn't it Ernst Zundel who, during his trial, paid Fred Leuchter and his wife to act as secretary to go over there and to examine the gas chambers? I think that Ernst Zundel was the one that funded that trip.
I read somewhere that he was initially funded by Jews first off. Whether Ernst Zundel paid him to go back there again for material, but I'd have to look into that. That was something that funnily enough, I only found that out recently. I think I was reading an article after I read this, and somewhere it said that Leuchter was actually a scientist who was sent over by Jews to get further evidence. But I just accepted that on its face value.
Sure.
It wasn't something, it wasn't like I was researching it to put in a book or anything.
Okay.
So that might be the case, but certainly the article I read had said that.
Okay.
But on here, I mean, we both know from what we've seen, it's the way that they write these things, because they move on.
Yeah.
And this is all that they say about my book is two little paragraphs. It says, among some of the more eye-opening anti-Semitic titles in the Amazon store are The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded and Uncensored, and Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. That's the Tex Miles book on a similar subject that
right.
people might be familiar with. It doesn't say anything about his book, but it says, The Synagogue of Satan blames the Jewish people for the slave trade, among other accusations, according to the Colonel. Well, okay, well, what is my allegation then? So, you see, the way they write it is like, oh, this is outlandish, this can't be true, but they don't say the allegation. And I can give them the allegation that they could have put in the story and quoted from the book, because it only is, it's only seven lines in my book. Between 1930 and 1935, Elizabeth Donham publishes a four-volume set, Documents Illustrative of the History of the Slave Trade to America. This shows that Jews totally dominated the trade in African slaves to America, and at least 15 of the ships used to transport the slaves were owned by Jews, some of whom had clear and close ties to the Rothschilds. In order to deceive the authorities that no Jews were involved, they often would use an all-Gentile crew and captain. So that's not a long line to put in, but you see, the way Jews work and the way Jew reporting works is to throw a few headlines out there but not give you the backstory. And we also, there are other bits in my book. There's, if you look up the Tony Martin, a black professor called Tony
right.
Martin, who did a presentation that was on a YouTube some years ago, I'm sure you'd still find it, called the Secret History Between Blacks and Jews, in which he does a whole hour and a half presentation.
Right, I've seen that.
He's actually introduced by David Irving. So right. David Irving does a presentation first, and then he introduces him, and he does this presentation and shows that it was the Jews that were behind the slave trade and not the white race. But, of course, the Jews... And then they... at the start of this article, they mentioned this book... they said that the most astonishing book in the whole collection is White Nationalist Guide to the Movies. Well, funnily enough, I hadn't heard of that, so I've ordered that since the other day.
Hopefully people will be ordering your book just to see what it says, just to have confirmation of their own conclusions. So have the sales improved on your book since the article came out?
The interesting thing, Deanna, is... A few months ago, and I think it'd probably be around that time, I used to check on the top 100 conspiracy books on Amazon. It was something that I'd look at now and then, because I got sent a link once, and I never even knew the section existed. And The Synagogue of Satan was always in there. And then I started following it a bit more when I bought out The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded and Uncensored, and In the Name of Yahweh, direct onto Amazon through... you know, Kindle, and it's also available on paperback, because I've basically gone back to, well, I've gone with a different publisher now, so I wanted to monitor how it was doing. And there was at one point I've got a saved, an archive saved page that has got The Synagogue of Satan Updated, Expanded and Uncensored at 1, and The Synagogue of Satan at 2, and I think In the Name of Yahweh about 18. And a few months ago, Synagogue of Satan is always there, and it's always either at number 2 or number 3 for the last 6 months. It's always there. But the other two completely disappeared, even though the sales have gone up. And so it was like...
interesting.
Yeah, and it was like, well, they're still selling it, so because I'm still getting the orders every month. So it's still being sold, but they've removed it from showing it in the bestseller list. But they've left the original Synagogue of Satan in there, the original Tex Miles version. And so all these things go through my mind. Well, why would they do that? And I contacted them. I said, look, and they said, oh, well, they don't always get in there. Cause I said, look, I said, you're fobbing me off here. I said, I follow this. And if you get one sale of the book like in the name of Yahweh sells one copy, it'll easily be at number, at some point during the day, it'll still be in the top 100 next day. And I was selling lots of copies.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no way why they shouldn't be, and suddenly they're both completely missing, and I'm selling several copies of, and I don't know how many of the paperbacks I sell because I can't monitor those. I just get an order from my publisher each month, you know.
Sure. Well, it's interesting to me, and it's always been interesting to me, is that the so-called New York Times bestseller list is devised in order to sell books. People who want to, you know, want to feel like they're updated and that they're on top of everything, they look at that list and say, oh, I must get this book or I must have that book. And it could sell, like for instance, in the New York Times bestseller list, sometimes it is interested parties that might buy several cases of a particular book that put it into the bestsellers list, or the New York Times or its editor or somebody in that network will simply just devise the list in order to sell books. It isn't really the quantity of books that is sold at all. It is just, you know, how surveys and polls often tell people, well, this is what to think, because look, all these other people, you know, it's consensus herd mentality thinking. So all these people can't be wrong. All these people who bought this book have made it the number, you know, in the bestseller, the top selling list. It's just a way of manipulating the public. And so they've removed your books in order to, well, gosh, would they deceive the public? Of course they would.
Yeah, it's it was really strange, you know, why they did it that way, but then I found something else which might be why they did this. This might have been the agreement that they came to. But after I found this article, I found an article from the worldjewishcongress.org. And this is dated the 17th of October. The Daily Mail article was dated the 16th of October, so they don't hang around. This is dated the 17th of October, and I'll read this one. And the weird thing is on that article that I just read from, there's about pictures of about 9 or 10 books. But on this article from the World Jewish Congress, the only book that they list is the product page for the Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored on Amazon. The story, this is off worldjewishcongress.org, don't sell books that deny the Holocaust, WJC urges Amazon.com, 17th of October 2013. New York, the World Jewish Congress today demanded that Amazon.com remove from its website books that deny the Holocaust and promote anti-Semitism and white supremacy. No one should profit from the sale of such vile and offensive hate literature. Many Holocaust survivors are deeply offended by the fact that the world's largest online retailer is making money from selling such material, WJC Executive Vice President Robert Singer wrote in a letter to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos. We are shocked and disgusted that Amazon has not yet removed these items, which came to light in news reports on October the 14th. Amazon.com's vending of hate literature was exposed by the Kernel, a British web publication. In April 2008, the WJC asked Amazon.com to remove merchandise that glorified the Nazi regime. At the time, the firm complied. Here we have the full text of Robert Singer's letter to Jeff Bezos. Dear Mr. Bezos, it has come to our attention that Amazon.com is selling books that deny the Holocaust and promote anti-Semitism and white supremacy. According to reports from our own investigation, these materials are even available to customers in countries such as France, Germany and Austria, where Holocaust denial is a crime and such texts are banned. Amazon's own policy on offensive material states, what we deem offensive is probably what you would expect. This includes items such as crime scene photos or human organs and body parts. Amazon.com reserves the rights to determine the appropriateness of items sold on our site. Also, be aware of cultural differences and sensitivities. Some items may be acceptable in one country but unacceptable in another. Please keep in mind our global community of customers. No one should profit from the sale of such vile and offensive hate literature. Most Holocaust survivors, there we go, Holocaust survivor. Most Holocaust survivors are deeply offended by the fact that the world's largest online retailer is making money from selling such material. We are shocked and disgusted that Amazon has not yet removed these items, which came to light in news reports on October the 14th. Please remove these items forthwith. Sincerely, Robert Singer, Executive Vice President and CEO, World Jewish Congress. And that was the letter they put on their site.
Wow. I absolutely believe, and apparently you do too, you believe that in order to know what they're doing, we really do need to look at what they're doing by going to their websites I must admit that I have subscribed to numerous Jewish email list so that I can keep track of what they are saying or what they are doing, such as this letter that you just read. And there's been attacks on other people who have also subscribed to such lists, even accusations that the person is, she must be Jewish if she's subscribing to the SPCA, you know, to the JDL or any of these organizations. No, people who look at what they're doing are doing, as Sun Tzu said, and they are looking at what their enemy is doing. We cannot fight what we don't know, and if we don't know what they're doing, how can we fight what they're doing?
Well, that's an interesting point, Deanna, because John Friend, who's also on the AFP network, I did a recent show with him, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and he said that these days he gets most of his articles from Jewish sources because they've become so bright, and he's talking about Jewish news sites like you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a bit lazier because I go in and out of, you know, because this can get to me dealing with this subject, I go in and out of promoting it and doing radio shows or posting things and what have you. So I'm not, you know, as prolific as I once was when I was getting as much information together to do a book. I don't see myself doing any more. But what I do try and do these days is if I can get one or two articles a day, I post it on a Twitter feed that also goes onto Facebook and then it goes up there. But my point being that I would look at John Friend's webpage and I would look at other different webpages of alternative news sites. I never go near Infowars.com for the obvious reason. But basically I try and find alternative news, and if there was something that related to the sort of things I write about, then that would be what I'd post. I've also posted images, interesting images, and what have you, relating to this subject of these people. But it makes perfect sense because they've become so brazen now. I mean, I think the most infamous story is the one about Jews do control Hollywood and we're proud of it.
Sure.
And it was that guy who came out in some Israeli newspaper saying how pleased he was about it, that we control Hollywood and we shape your minds.
Of course. And of course, there's also a book, I don't have it right in front of me, that admits that they control Hollywood. And this book has been, it was published several years ago. So they know it, and a lot of other people know it, but apparently some people don't know it.
No, exactly. And I mean, going back to that book that I said to you about, that they said the most bizarre book in the list, it's actually called Trevor Lynch's White Nationalist Guide to the Movies. And he's taken different films. It's not cheap. It's quite expensive for what it is, but it's one of these things that's really worth having. And I've always said to the people, say if you take a film like 2012, I'll bring that up because that was quite a blockbuster. You know, it was a disaster movie about all the world. You know, it was spectacular special effects. I don't know if you ever saw it, Deanna, but it was taking the 2012 Mayan calendar theory, and you know, you watch Yellowstone blowing up and Las Vegas sliding into the earth, and the USS JFK being washed up and landing on the White House and all these different things. But the main crux of the story for me was a couple of interesting little bits. When all America's being hit by these earthquakes, this newscaster comes on and says, oh yes, and Mexico has opened its border to America so they can come in, you know, and it was their way of saying, oh, they never let the border open to us. But the key part of the film, you had the key character is the president is a black guy, but the key character is this black scientist who knows that 2012 is going to happen. He's the only intelligent scientist that there is. I mean, there's all these black scientists running about, and we see them every day. But he's the only intelligent scientist that apparently that there is in this film, who's convincing everyone else that, who's laughed out of, you know, caught by everyone else that he's saying that these problems are happening. And then they start to happen, and he ends up in the thick of it. And it turns out his father is a musician on a cruise ship, and he's a sort of double act with another musician, and the other musician's a white guy, and he doesn't speak to his he lost touch with his son because his son married an Oriental, and he disapproved of him marrying an Oriental and having an Oriental child together. And so that's shown, and then in the end the cruise gets turned over and they all die, and just beforehand the guy manages to phone his son, the black guy, and phone his son, and it's all very tearful, you know, good luck, and you know, try your best to save the world. And then the other guy tries to phone his son, you know, to have a reconciliation, that he's so ashamed that he turned his back on him for race mixing. And the sweet little half-caste girl answers the phone, and just as his son's coming to the phone, then their house gets washed away, you know. So, and this is the sort of stuff. And then at the very end of the film, the only environment left that was untouched by this disaster was Africa, and all the blacks are welcoming all these whites on these ships into Africa. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's bizarre. This is what films are about. So if you spoke to someone, they'd say, oh, 2012, it's a really good action film, and it's all about the world ends, you know, and everything gets destroyed and people are battling to stay alive. That's what they'll say it's about, but that's not what it's about. That's not what films are about. Films are Jewish. They're like programs, like you get television programs. They're programming you to think a certain way. And what this book, White Nationalist Guide to the Movies, I saw Django Unchained last year, which I wasn't keen on seeing because I used to, some of Tarantino's stuff, you know, I remember when I was, you change as you get older. When I was younger, I think I saw his first film, it became big in England before it became big in America. It was kind of England that launched it. It just took off for some reason. And I saw it at some cinema when I was only about 20. You know, when you're at that age, or certainly when I was that age, it was always, you thought that the way forward was the going against the establishment. And so if you saw a violent film and all that, and that was good, and the people that were trying to keep violence out of films, they were the censors and they were bad and all this. But now you look upon it and you realise that you were actually on the wrong side. The censors were trying to keep the sense of morality. And the people going against the censorship were trying to destroy your morality, as they have. But I'll just read the start of Django Unchained in review, but I actually put this up, and people can, if people type in Trevor Lynch Django Unchained review, you'll find it on Google. I think I found it on there. But this is out of the book. It says, Django Unchained, another Jewish wet dream. Quentin Tarantino's last movie, Inglourious Basterds, tells the story of a group of American Jews who team up with a non-white and Amerindian white mix from Tennessee with an Italian name like Tarantino himself to torture, mutilate and slaughter evil white men and women, Germans, Nazis, during World War II. This film, in short, is nothing but an elaborate fantasy of Jewish sadism and revenge. Tarantino's producer, Lawrence Bender, told him, as your producing partner, I thank you, and as a member of the Jewish tribe, I thank you. And then it says MF, because this movie is effing Jewish wet dream. Lovely people. And that's basically, you see, and this is and this one, of course, this is about slave trade, and it's showing how the blacks treat how the whites are so terrible to all the blacks and what have you, and there's all sorts of eye gouging scenes and all sorts of things like that that it's full of. The review itself, let me see. It says, if Tarantino had merely wanted to whip up blacks into a murderous rage against whites, he would have made a very different movie. But Tarantino had quite another audience in mind. Tarantino wants an Oscar. He wants it bad. Thus, Django Unchained is another Jewish wet dream. This is a movie calculated to appeal to the Jewish hatred of white Americans. Specifically, Django Unchained is about the Jewish strategy of using blacks as biological weapons of mass destruction against whites. Released on Christmas Day so Jews could see it either before or after dinner at a Chinese restaurant. There's some humour in there as well. But it's and the thing is he's what I love about this guy is I thought I was one of the only people that I haven't really heard people speak about. You know, people always say about, oh, the movies, they're just Jewish, like mind control, but I've never written a review of a film, like I just went through that 2012 film, but this guy's actually been putting them together, and I've seen that film, and when you read something, and there was a lot more in there that I hadn't recognised, but after reading that review, I do recognise, and so I'm actually, it's going to make me watch other films as well that I... He does some interesting... I think he reviews the Batman trilogy, and there's apparently loads of subliminal things in there and stuff. So, it looks like an interesting book at all. The point is if something like this can be worthy of mentioning in an article calling it anti-Semitic, when he's making reasoned, considered and accurate judgments, it's because no one's going to read the book. They're just going to read that headline and say it's anti-Semitic. You know, that book's probably sold, lucky if it's got up into four figures in copies because it's so specialised. But even that, the Jews don't want on the shelves. This is how evil these people are and how desperate they are to control everything.
Well, I think, and I might be wrong, but I think that there are a lot more people who are questioning the Holocaust, and there are a lot more people who are looking askance at the Jews and their behavior, and for good reason. But I definitely think that that we should be watching and seeing what they're doing. And I hate to admit it because I didn't really want, it just made me irritated me to spend the money on this one book that I purchased called Viral Hate by Abraham H. Foxman. But I just thought, I hate to spend the money, but I want to know what he's spreading. I want to know what he's saying because you can't counter what you don't know. So anyway, I bought the book, the Kindle version.
I know what you mean, Deanna, because I certainly... and it had been out for years, and obviously if I would have wanted to see it, I would have seen it. And that was that Inglourious Basterds film. It had been out since 2007. I only saw that earlier this year. I felt I had to see it, and I didn't enjoy it. But you had to see it to see how insane these people are. And you have to remember as well, that each of these Tarantino films from day one have been produced by Harvey Weinstein. And the Weinstein company, and he's a Jew that lives over in England, funnily enough. And I actually posted an article about him. I was convinced that Idris Elba was going to win the Oscar for Best Actor for this portrayal of Mandela. I don't think he was even nominated in the end. But he came out with a line. He said, oh, he should be getting the Best Actor for this film. And if the girls in my office are to be believed, he should get the Most Sexiest Man of 2014 as well. You know, so basically most of these office girls working for a Jew are going to be white. you know, and he's basically saying, now, all these white girls who work for me, they're going to want this black man. He's sex, and this is what it's come to now. You watch, like, all the Jews are doing, and I've been through this before, is they're promoting the race mixing because they want us to wipe ourselves out.
Oh, of course. I think that's why they have, well, look, they own all the sports teams, and we know that a lot of the teams are composed of people of different races, and they make these people millionaires, and, they are going to track babes.
Well, and it's the way, yeah, because you see, it's the portrayal of, they've just hit it from all angles, but I was speaking to someone recently, I mean, I don't watch television, but there was some dating show over here, and it sounded quite bizarre, but all these women would be in rooms, and they'd be shown, like, an image of a person, and if they liked them, the light would go on, and they're all, like, white, these women, and as soon as they were shown the black guy, they all put their lights on, because, you see, the people that they promote, and it is quite funny, because they promoted for a long while O.J. Simpson, and his wife, as fine examples of race mixing, and then that spectacularly backfired on them, and then they did the same with Tiger Woods and his wife, which again spectacularly backfired on them. You know, it turns out he was having sex with every white woman he could get his hands on, by all accounts, and she had enough and threw him out, but not before she's brought some mixed-race kids into the world, as they all like to do, and that is the plan. But the other plan is that it was the strong white man that used to be the threat to the Jews. That was the biggest threat to the Jews. That's why they were kicked out of all these countries throughout Europe.
Exactly.
Some many times over. But you never saw them kicked out of China or kicked out of Africa or anything like that. They've got a deep-seated hatred of the white man. And this aspect of actually, if we go back to the Garden of Eden, I firmly believe that if you take most men and most women, if you take it as an average, which we don't like to do because people are different, but my point is that men tend to be colder and think more more logical. Again, not all of them, but that's the general consensus, is that if you were to say the difference between a man and a woman, then women would be more emotional and men would be colder and more logical. And so what I believe that they're doing is all this promotion of how badly the slaves were treated and all this is designed to make the white women sympathize with the black man and feel that, you know, by going off with these people and having
you
that,
are right.
They're, right. They're, you know, that and so they're instilling this white guilt in there. And then on top of all that, so they've got that aspect going for the intellectual ones. So the clever ones, they get them to all the psychology and the white race is so bad. And then on the you know, shop girl level, if you like, they promote the Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, and then they promote, you. If you look at, you just said about the sports teams all owned by Jews, well, all the players are black largely, but what are all the cheerleaders? They're all white girls. And so you've got all these white girls jumping up saying how wonderful these blacks are.
Oh,
and so it goes
gosh.
On and on. And this is my point. It goes back to something you might have mentioned in one of our first interviews together, and that is that the Jew is inherently evil, and it's like a cat with a mouse. It's actually disappointed when the mouse is dead because it likes tormenting it for as long as possible before death actually occurs.
Or at least extracting as much profit as they can.
Yeah, they use us for a variety of things, but you see, their feeling now is everything that could be invented is pretty much there. You know, they've got a lot, they're 10 years ahead of what they were planned to give us anyway, because we know people like Microsoft have been found out to be, you know, several years ahead of what they drip feed to us.
Sure.
Because they want you to buy the same product over and over again as they keep improving it. They don't want to invent something, they want to release it to you in stages, so you keep buying the next one. And then we know, you know, military hardware, it's got absolutely crazy. I mean, I was reading Tex Mars's Robot Alchemy, and that was quite interesting with all these different
Exactly.
Different sort of book to read, but the machines that they've got that can literally ingest human bodies and live off that, and it's just bizarre, the sort of things, and the actual machines they've got in some of these factories is science fiction, you know. And you're getting to a stage where you're going to have these, I mean, we've already got all these drones going everywhere. You're going to get to a stage where you're going to have robot armies and goodness knows what else. But what's almost more frightening is all this robotizing of the workforce that they're doing. And so
absolutely.
So, yeah, it's madness what's going on in the world. But
Andy, you mentioned something that I just want to clarify, that I just want to focus on a little bit. You said that they want to get white women to feel sorry, to feel sympathy for the black man. Well, they are the masters. The Jews are the masters at evoking sympathy. So
yeah.
Why wouldn't they use that sympathy card to do what they have been very successful at doing over the centuries, and most particularly when they promoted this Holocaust hoax?
Well, exactly. It's, I mean, it reminds me of this quote, Nahum Goldman, who was the chairman of the World Jewish Congress for about 30 or 40 years, and he said in his autobiography, The Jewish Paradox, he said, I hardly exaggerate. Jewish life consists of two elements, extracting money and protesting. And, I mean, that sums it up, because all their professions that they gravitate to are the banking, the media, the law, all these different things where, essentially, when you are working, it's in extreme levels of comfort, and you're getting overpaid for what you're doing. There's none of this actually doing demanding physical work that they would not be prepared to do. Their work is always based upon exploitation of some kind or another. And then the protesting element just goes back to exactly what you said there. Their protesting is a form of garnering sympathy. And this is why the Holocaust story is so important to them, because I've often seen they divide people into categories so they can get what they want. They first decide what they want, and what they want is no white people on the earth, but they want the whites to get rid of them themselves. So the best thing to do is, it's the women who have the children. They couldn't care less if the whites go and have a child with a black woman, as long as they don't have a child with a white woman. Now, they can't legislate for that. They could release a bioweapon and kill off all the whites, but they want to keep some of the whites around for themselves. So what they choose to do is they'll promote the race mixing, get the white women to go off with the black men. So that means that they have to make the black men more attractive to the white women than the white men are to the white women. And so, as I say, they promote the rappers. And, you know, rap was like some horrible thing years ago, and now it's mainstream, and they promote that as you know, actual music, when it's just nothing of the kind. It was pretty much laughed at as music. They've got a new film coming out, incidentally, about Jimi Hendrix, which shows him going off with all the white women, and, you know, just to encourage them to do all this in the media. And then there was something I read recently, I think it was the University of Wisconsin or something, that they were teaching their students that it's unfair to be white.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're
gosh.
Actually teaching the students that, some lecturer. And they push all that because it's like, and the stories that are horrendous coming out of these college campuses where, you know, a white girl, if she's not got a black boyfriend, she's considered racist. And this is the way that they do it. So they get the so-called more intelligent people, but really, as we know, intelligence is only based upon what you are prepared to learn. So if you believe every bit of history they tell you for your history test and you remember it, then you'll do well in the education system that they promote. But if they say to a class, right, here, take one of each of the protocols and learn the Elders of Zion and write up examples of each of these things that you can see happening today and bring it in tomorrow, that's called using your brain and looking for examples of what you've got in front of you, not looking at something and remembering it and then putting it there. But they wouldn't do that for obviously a variety of reasons. But the other thing that I believe is the Jewish brain, as we know, Jews are like elephants, they never forget. That's why they were quite prepared to wait over 100 years, and they said that they would wait as long as it took to destroy the Tsar and his descendants after he blocked their takeover with the Congress of Vienna. As you know, that was 1815 after the Napoleonic Wars, and they tried to get some sort of European Union then. The Russia vetoed it. The Rothschilds weren't happy, and they threatened revenge. 100 years later, they got it. Same with what we see happening all throughout Europe and all the white nations of the world today, who've kicked out the Jews at various points in their history. They're now, immigration is only ever one way. You never get loads of whites going into Japan or China or Africa. It's always these different races coming into the white nations.
Sure. And speaking of revenge, Andy, and I've always said this, well, not always, but I said it in my most recent book, that the German people convened the first Congress on September 11-12 in 1882 to figure out, how to address the Jewish question and the Jewish problems in Europe. And delegates came from all the European countries, and it was in Dresden that they had that conference. And it is my opinion that they bombed Dresden and destroyed Dresden because that's where the Congress was. And, of course, we know that the Jews were really in charge of all the bombing operations during World War II, both in America and in England.
Yeah. I mean, that again, that doesn't surprise me. It's not something that I'd heard, but it's just something that I've not read. I completely believe what you've said there. But it goes back to they will always have their revenge, and it also goes back to the memory side of things, as I believe the Jewish brain is at its best. It works not in a creative sense, but in a memory sense. And so they've got very good memories, so they can have the upper hand on other races if a measure of your ability is your ability to remember things. Then they're going to do well in exams that are, right, you know, you go to all these lessons and then you do a bit of revision, or, you know, their brain is in such that they'll remember facts, and that's why they excel at these professions like the legal profession and what have you, because of their memory of facts.
Right.
And the memory of facts isn't anything to do with intelligence. You know, I know people that have got no qualifications, but they work as like a minicab driver, a taxi driver I'm talking about, and they've got a far greater intelligence of dealing with situations than someone I know with a PhD, for example.
Sure.
Because they, and their job, they'll have someone, funnily enough, the guy that I'm referring to, he had that tennis player, Serena Williams, in his car a year or so ago, because he works around the Wimbledon area, and they're over for Wimbledon tennis that we just had finished recently. But he'll talk to people at all levels. He gets drunks in his car. He's had people that have literally mugged him in his car. And he's had high court judges that he used to pick up in his car. And it's because the nature of his firm is supposed to be slight or a cut above, but then they still have to do the regular weekend work and dealing with the drunks from the nightclubs and what have you. But as an individual, he's got no qualifications you can speak of. But when you sort of see him in day-to-day activity, the way his mind works is quite clever. But, you know, you wouldn't think that if you looked at him on paper.
The other thing, too, Andy, is that lawyers are always a big part of, well, like Congress, and of course they altered one of the amendments, the 13th Amendment, which the original amendment here in this country said that no lawyers could be part and parcel of Congress, and then they altered it, and if, you know, after the War of 1812. pretty soon you had all these lawyers in Congress, and I was I'm looking at a book right now. It's by Benjamin Ginsberg, and it's called The Fatal Embrace: Jews and the State. And there's also another book, one that I purchased that I just felt that I had to have, because it is a book that is that talks about the Jews in Congress. Let me just look and give you the title here. It's called The Jews of Capitol Hill. It's by Kurt F. Stone. And although people really can't, if you sit down and you think, okay, who do we have in Congress that's Jewish? And, you might say, oh, yeah, Feinstein and Waxman, and you might be able to count them on your fingers, ten Jews that you think of. But when you read the book, you think, oh, my gosh, they've had a presence in Congress for a very, very long time, because
Absolutely.
This book talks about 200 of them. Mm. And so when you talk about lawyers, they do have a lot to do with Congress. And something else that you were talking about in getting rid of white males, what better way of getting rid of white males or to marginalize them than to send them off to war, pump them full of terrible, terrible, terrible experimental vaccines that will make them incredibly ill. And keep in mind that the people that go off to war between 18 and 21, most of them not married. And so they go off to war, and their brains get messed up. They put them on psychiatric drugs, pump them full of experimental vaccines. And most of those people, I think, are white. I think if you look at the numbers of people that enlist, I think that you'll find that the majority are white. The other thing is that you have a lot of autistic boys. Most of the people who are autistic are boys, because their testosterone, they have testosterone, whereas females have estrogen, and testosterone is more vulnerable to some of the things in vaccines than estrogen. So you are this is targeting the male gender.
Yeah.
Is this just speculation, or I mean, it's an idea, it's a thought.
No, I think it's an excellent thought, and I think this is where we need to take things now, because we can pretty much prove that the Jews were behind 9/11 by a variety of different documents, both mainstream and, you've got the Carl Cameron Fox reports and showing about these the dancing Israelis, and then the 400 Israelis that were deported by Chertoff, and all these different things. But we've got to start looking at what's happening in our world, because it's got to such a critical point. We can't wait for another disaster. We've got to try and prevent one from happening. And the biggest one is the essentially the annihilation of our race. Now, I was thinking earlier, and I was on a show with a guy called Clay Douglas. It was supposed to be, we were going to do an hour, and it ran on, and then we got trouble connecting, so I went to disconnect from him, and I had to literally take the phone apart because it wouldn't disconnect from Skype, and then I put it back together, and I saw you miscalling me and what have you.
Oh, bless your heart. Oh, my goodness.
It was just one of those things. I'd never done a show with him before, and so it's sort of about 4 hours I'm going to do now. But I'm enjoying it, so that's fine. But basically, what I was saying was... and what I came out to him with, I don't actually have any children. I don't have any plans now. I'm 41. I don't really have any plans to have any children. But I still feel that I've got a duty to do, even though I'm not leaving anyone behind. All I'll leave behind is my books. But I still feel that I have a duty to my race. And I also felt that when I was, when I was a kid, I've never felt... antipathy towards other people, but I did recognise them as aliens and not of the native population. It didn't mean I treated them differently or went round beating up people that weren't white at school or stuff like that, but it would certainly never cross my mind to enter a relationship with someone for having children or anything like that. And that's got That's before I ever read the first bit of conspiracy fact ever, or ever read anything from the Bible ever. It was just something that was in my blood. It didn't make me a bad person. I felt it made me a good person. I felt that it was wrong to take the woman of another race because she belonged to that race. Mm-hmm. And that's what it boils down to. That's the hate. That's the aggression. You know, you've got a crow that goes into a pigeon's nest to take one of the female pigeons, then all the other pigeons are going to have a go at it, aren't they? To my mind, it's just plain wrong. The races were put here separately. If we were all supposed to be mixed together, then we would have all been mixed together. But what people are doing now is they're practicing their own amateur genetic engineering with one another because they believe what the media is telling them. And the media try to pretend they're all love and all good in one breath. And they'll have all these campaigns just to save this species and World Wildlife Fund, send money to save this, while they're sitting idly by as the pure races. And there are pure blacks in America as there are in England, and there are pure Indians, Pakistanis, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite happy to allow these people to commit racial genocide, because in the end there won't be any individual races left if this plan of theirs comes to fruition. And
well, Andy, I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt. I mean, you did say, and I have also talked about it in one of my books, that the Jews were behind the importation of slaves, blacks,
yeah,
into this country. That,
yeah,
was the first big, huge race-mixing operation, and they were behind it.
Yeah,
which proves your point.
Yeah, and this is, I'm pleased you said this, Deanna, because I did a bit of research recently, and I worked out that at the same time as they were advancing what they basically had to do, they had the Second World War, and then they had whites killing whites, and they did the American racial, I forget what it was called. You had, the law was changed in the mid-60s, but you used to only be able to allow an equivalent number of immigrants to come in,
right,
based upon your current racial demographics. So 30% of the American population were originally German, then you could allow 30% of that year's immigrants to be German. And then that was changed later in the decade to be primarily of African and what have you countries. Now, what happened in the European nations is you got whites against whites, and then they said, oh, you know, we've got a problem now because nobody wants to work on the railways, or nobody wants to work for the post office, or all these different jobs that no one wanted to do. And so they went over to and they actually had recruiters for London Transport in Jamaica. They actually had recruitment offices, and you'd apply, and they'd send you over there on a boat, and they'd house you, and you'd get a job as a guard or a driver or what have you. But the point is that an economy only is going to be as big as its population. So this idea that, you know, everyone in Britain was only prepared to be an accountant, and so there was no one to drive trains, is just nonsense, because an economy would dictate itself. People wouldn't be able to go to work in different jobs that there wasn't any demand for. Consequently, they wouldn't have that job, and they would have to go for another job, which would have been what jobs were available, such as a train driver, a train guard, or what have you.
Sure.
But they sell you this lie that, oh, the white people, they weren't prepared to work on the trains. It was beneath them, so we had to bring the blacks in. And the reason that they said it that way was by saying that these people were coming to do jobs that we weren't prepared to do. They were basically saying, these people are second-class citizens, so don't worry about them. They're not a threat to you.
Well, that's the same thing as what George W. Bush was saying. He said, well, these undocumented workers, they're just going to come up here and do the jobs that Americans won't do. So
yeah,
it's the exact same talking points.
Exactly.
These people are not creative. They don't change their tactics one bit. Go ahead.
No, no, you go ahead, Deanna. Finish your thought.
No, I mean, they really don't change their tactics. They're not that creative. They're more left-brained, as you have indicated. And so they they keep using the same methodology because, quite frankly, we just don't remember. We're not keeping up with what they're doing because we're naive and trusting and because we don't think the same way. We do not conceive of a group of people who are so evil that they would, in fact, attempt to destroy us and to do the things that these people have done. We just wouldn't conceive of it.
No, you're absolutely correct. This is the age-old thing. And I remember, and you know what I think about David Icke and Alex Jones and what have you, but I remember
sure.
one time I saw, because these people can be good speakers because that's how they attract people. But one thing David Icke said is people say they wouldn't do that, and you should say, no, I wouldn't do that, but they would. You know, and people base what other people would do on what they would do. I remember telling someone that I know about Sandy Hook that I'd read, you know, that there was this myth that the school didn't exist and stuff. And he was just started laughing straight away. You know, you must be mad to even entertain looking at that. And I've not really looked into that issue. But my point being is that their immediate thing is, how on earth could someone get an event such as that, or 9/11, and how could they pull it off? Someone would speak out. You know, it's not possible to pull it off, and so they dismiss it. You could tell them all sorts of facts, but they dismiss it until it's out of hand because they don't think that it's possible to be done. And so you don't get the opportunity with some people to give them the background of how it was done. But basically, what we had in the UK, it started off in 1965, we had the Race Relations Act. It made it an offence to discriminate on the grounds of colour, race or ethnic and national origins in public places. Right, so that's it, that's 1965. And that was passed by a Jew, Frank Foxis, who was made a Lord straight afterwards. Only 3 years after the Race Relations Act, it's amended, and it now makes it illegal to refuse housing or employment or public services on the grounds of colour, race. And so what they've, in only 3 years, firstly, you can't discriminate in public, but you could still say, you know, I don't want a black person working for my company. Now you're not allowed to do that 3 years later. But that wasn't enough. And so what they did was they came back, they came back, I think, 8 years later with a third amendment for the Race Relations Act. So they've gone now 11 years to get it how they want. And that was, it was first used the word discriminate, whereas the other acts, it was illegal to refuse employment, to refuse public services, to refuse serving someone in the shop. But difference in saying refuse employment to discriminate in the fields of employment, because the key here is that it's removing the employer's choice as to who they hire. At the amended 1968 Act, if you had a job available that an immigrant could do, but you chose to hire a native white person, that was acceptable. But under the 1976 Act, employers were put in a position that if an immigrant applied for a job and did not get it, that person could run to the Commission for Racial Equality and cause problems for the employer. And so the employers were scared of negative attention that could draw to their business. And so as a result, if they had a black person or a white person applied for the same job, out of fear of the black person going to the Commission for Racial Equality, they would employ the black person.
Exactly. And you can also apply that to what is going on now with gay people.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about them, and what I've, and funnily enough, I read this somewhere today, but I've always said, you know, I'm a heterosexual and I enjoy things with a woman that I don't feel the need of simulating in front of people on a march. It's a mental illness, in my opinion, this homosexuality business, because I wouldn't dream of marching in front of people simulating sex acts. And that seems to be all these people do on these gay marches.
Oh, it's terrible. I've never been to one and wouldn't
well,
go to
I've
one.
I've got quite a funny story because I don't know if you've been to the UK, but there's an area.
I have, actually.
Yeah.
I've been
okay.
to the UK.
Well, I don't know if you ever went to Leicester Square.
I have.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Well, what it is that I was out with a friend of mine, actually, and we were walking around because we were trying to find, it was in the summer, we were trying to find a pub that we could sit outside of. And you've got the square and you've got all the pubs and restaurants and everything around this square. And so we're walking round and round because we're just waiting for somebody to see a seat free outside and then dive to get that, and then one of us will go in and get some drinks, you know, so we get people. And so the only way to do it was to keep walking round until somewhere became free. So we were doing that and we kept seeing these people. And suddenly we realised we're in the middle, it wasn't a full-blown gay pride march, but we were in the middle of some sort of gay march, and then we just dived into the straight first pub, even though there wasn't any seats outside. But it was quite bizarre, because at first we just thought, oh, we're in London, and there's a couple of blokes walking in front of us with these cut-off jeans right up their backside, you know, and then, well, there's some women kissing and stuff, and then we suddenly saw some banners, and we were like, we're in the middle of a gay pride march. just sort of bailed out. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like something, I don't know what it was. It was something obviously, presumably unofficial. It wasn't a main one because these days they'd be closing streets off and stuff like that. But it was quite amusing at the time. But, yeah, it's the way these things work, the way... Another observation I had recently, and it's somewhat controversial, but I don't consider it offensive. From a young age, I used to go around record shops and that in London from the age of about 13, 14. I used to buy and sell rare records. I was quite into music and stuff. And a lot of these record shops around Notting Hill Gate, and there's an area called, off Tottenham Court Road, Oxford Street. But there was some around the Soho area, and that's where the big red light area is in London. And what you would find, I remember, and this thought came to me, because I remember when I was 14, walking around, and, you know, I get a bit nervous sometimes in that area. And recently, I had to walk through there because I decided to do a bit of a walk across London. So I went to London Aquarium and I walked across Embankment, the bridge, across the Embankment, Covent Garden, Leicester Square, through Soho into Oxford Street to Tottenham Court Road. And as I went through Soho, a thought struck me that I probably first walked through here, say 25 years ago. And in that time, I remember I'd see women on street corners, and they'd have tattoos, have a few tattoos, there'd be some black guy stood near them, and you'd say to yourself, well, that's probably a prostitute and that's a pimp there. But now, if you saw a woman with tattoos and a black guy stood next to them, that might be the local primary school teacher and her husband.
Oh, man.
And
you are so right. And
people, you know, yeah, and people can say it's a controversial statement, but that is where we've gone. That's called progress, you know?
Wow.
And they've basically turned all the white women into these tattooed up women that look like prostitutes did 20, 25 years ago, and they've turned them into race mixers at the same time. And that is what they've given, that is Jewish media's contribution to Western civilization.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of young women are getting tattoos, and I went to a graduation party just recently, and there were several young women there. That had one of them, she had tattoos all the way up her arm and onto her back. It was just amazing. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, this stuff is poison. You put this is poison that they are putting, you know, injecting into their skin. All of those colors, those are all poison. It's all poison.
Yeah. And it's just a very, and it's such a sad state of affairs because, I part of me feels sorry for these people and part of me asks how they can be so stupid. You know, and again, it goes back to the scriptural side. And I want to make it clear to the listeners, you know, I don't pretend to be whiter than white. I've committed countless sins in my life, you know. But I do have a job to point out what I've researched. That doesn't mean that I've always done everything right in my life. But one of the laws in the Bible that isn't really talked about is that you are not to pierce or mark the flesh. Now, what I've identified when I put in the name of Yahweh together was whenever I saw something in the Talmud that contradicted the laws in the Old Testament, because the Jews always claim the Torah is the Old Testament and they follow the Old Testament law. Wrong, they don't. They follow the Talmud. Even mainstream people accept that now, that they follow the Talmud above anything else. And so as soon as I saw something contradictory in the Talmud, I would put that under that part of the law in my In the Name of Yahweh book. But when you look at society and the commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, which is actually thou shalt not adulterate. You have to look at various different translations. I think I had 12 New Testaments, 8 Old Testaments when I did my book, and I did everything off the King James Bible because I didn't want to be seen to be cherry-picking verses to suit what I was trying to say. You find, of course, thou shalt not adulterate, and then you combine that with what it goes to 30 or 40 times in the Old Testament: don't take their daughters for your sons, don't give your daughters to their sons, don't mix the beasts of the field, don't mix the seeds of the field. And it's all about purity, even to the extent that Judah, who the tribe of Judah came from, he had 2 or 3 children with non-white women, and they were male children, and the genealogy always goes to the firstborn son. Not in this case. It didn't go to the firstborn son in this case because it went to Ferez and Zara, that were twins, and they ended up going over to Germany and Scotland, Ireland, respectively, and that's where the Judahites descended through into Germany and into Ireland and Scotland. But they were about his third or fourth born, but they were the first born to a white woman. And all this is in the scripture, but people aren't told about it. There's a story of Phineas. You might have heard of the Phineas priesthood. It's a very, would be regarded as a very controversial story, but essentially, if people look up Phineas priesthood, they will find that there was a guy called Phineas who saw race mixing going on in his tribe, and he killed the people who were participating in it, and as a result he was given a lifelong priesthood by God, and because he was protecting the racial origins and structure of the tribe. So it is repeated, and my point being as well is, if someone can tell me one good thing that the governments do, they don't do anything good. All they do is kill and destroy their own people primarily, and then when they bore of doing it to them, then they do it abroad, and they use their own people to do it as well, like we see in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, what have you. The governments are not your friends, folks, and when you see what they're pushing and what their media is pushing, you should immediately push back in the opposite direction, because these people aren't trying to help you. These people want you to suffer. These people don't necessarily want you dead straight away because they want you to suffer first. And that is because they are aware, the Jews are aware of what is clearly said in Genesis 3:15, that is, there's going to be a war between the descendants of Adam, who then became Seth, because Abel was killed by Cain, and the descendants of Cain, who was the descendant of Satan's seduction of Eve in the garden, and that was the Jewish race today. But you see, the Jews know this, and so they're obeying their father Satan by doing everything in their power to destroy the white race. And their favourite, as I say at the moment, is race mixing, because if they do it that way, they're actually getting the whites to willingly do it. If they were sending out hordes of blacks to rape white women and forcing them to have the children, but no, they're actually getting the white women to allow that to happen to them, to actually request that happens to them, to make a first choice that they prefer this black man to a white man. And by doing that, not only have they've also given one in the eye to the white race man who they detest so much.
Sure.
Because they're saying, here, look, we've taken, we've we've taken your base instinct away. You can't even have your we can't even have your women anymore. We've given them to the blacks. You know, we started off by bringing a few over and taking your jobs, but now they're taking your women, and the white race will not lift a finger because they haven't done up to now, and they just don't do anything about it. And I'm amazed. I'm one of the only people talking about this subject when I haven't really got any axe to grind on it. I'll probably be here for another 30, 40 years if they don't kill me off beforehand, if I die of natural causes. But I haven't got people behind me people that I'm leaving behind, you know, sons, daughters, what have you. Whereas a lot of listeners have, and I find it astonishing how people don't do anything about this problem, or at least do a radio show or an article or a book or something to just highlight this. But I feel it always comes down to a handful of us, Deanna, and I get to a stage where I think, well, I'll post my Facebook thing once a day, but I'm not going to write anymore or anything because, you know, you just... How much more do people need? You know, sure. You've written a couple of books. I've written a couple of books. You're doing radio shows regularly. You've done 1,000 nearly, I think, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still having to say the same things. And unfortunately, I think it's because we're getting a similar audience and we're not getting a lot of movement. But then people tell me, they say, oh, no, we are getting movement. Don't worry, it's just taking its time. And I get to a stage where I can only see change happening in America because you still have weapons. Well, our weapons were taken away long ago. The only way I can see change happening, my personal feeling is it would be some sort of divine intervention. It talks in Revelation of the Jew being angry, or Satan being angry when all the other races, it refers to them as races, multitudes and tongues, in the Israelite countries. And of course, if it's Israel, well, there's only one country. But in the Israelite nations, in the end days, they're swallowed up by the ground. And I don't believe that little bits of ground are going to open up beneath wherever a non-white person is walking. But I believe what that might mean is some sort of virus or something is triggered off that attacks a certain strand of DNA, and then they're buried. So that was why it would mean the ground swallows them up.
And then that's an interesting thought.
But that's what it says in Revelation. And you see, this is when I read something like that, I think, well, you know, people say that this is all a load of nonsense, but how do they know that in these end times, or at any time in history in the future, we're going to have all these different immigrants into each and every white nation, you know?
Sure. Something that you said just a few minutes ago white women choosing black men. During World War II, there was a lot of black-on-white rape. And people literally, particularly in Germany, many of those women killed themselves because they found themselves pregnant, and they chose death rather than to have a child. And of course, the rape itself was a traumatic experience. But that's an interesting thing. Look at how things have changed in a period of 60 years. And of course, rape was something that was forced upon them, but now they're choosing to, many people are choosing to cohabit with somebody that is not of their own race. It's very interesting. And what do you tell people? What do you say to people who say, oh, yes, but the Bible was written by the Jews, and so they have written everything, and so how can you possibly believe the Bible? How do you respond to that?
Well, what I say, Deanna, is that firstly, they're under the misapprehension that the Jews are the Israel of the Bible, and so they first need to read through. And what I've put together is I can prove, for example, Adam, who we didn't all come from, because there are other races created before Adam, as it clearly says in the Bible, but his real name is Adam, which was Hebrew, which meant a ruddy face, or to show blood in the face, which is the white race. It goes on to mention King David was ruddy, and it goes on to with Abraham, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, and we're going to be known as the sons of Isaac, or if you take Isaac's sons and you say Sack sons, you drop the I, and instead of Isaac's sons, you've got Sack sons. You've got all the heraldry, the images of that are applied in the Bible to different tribes. Like you have the image of water applied to a certain tribe, and the image of a deer applied to a certain tribe, the image of an eagle applied to a certain certain tribe. I've got all the different, I don't remember exactly which was applied to which offhand, but I've actually got it all in my book that I'm just grabbing now, but referred to heraldry. So the tribe of Gad, it has the heraldry of a man on a horse, and then out of the tribe of Asher, they've got a heraldry as a covered cup or goblet, and then the tribe of Naphtali, the emblem becomes a deer. Let me see.
Right. All the tribes had their own insignia, their own flag, and
And this is the important one, because the tribe of Manasseh, tribe of Joseph, he was given a double blessing.
Ephraim and Manasseh, yeah.
Yeah, and it says here, there's a bough, branch of a tree, and archers shooting arrows. The primary emblem of the tribe of Manasseh is an olive branch, with the secondary emblem being a bundle of arrows. The nation that uses this symbology in its emblems is the United States, and these are generally shown beneath an eagle. The bundle of arrows, and sorry, I got the eagle bit wrong when I mentioned it before, it's the bundle of arrows that you see beneath the eagle. Or the olive branch. It says the bundle of arrows is also used in the arms of towns in England and Scotland, and was one of the original emblems for the emblem of Holland. Then it goes on to Ephraim being a bull and horns and unicorns, and of course Ephraim ended up England, Scotland, Denmark. And when you look at the royal coat of arms, you've got one side is supported by the Lion of Judah, and the other side is supported by a unicorn. And in Scotland, the unicorn supports both sides. So, and it's actually saying in the Bible, this will be. I've given my explanation, but an example of one of the lines there is Genesis 49:22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by well whose branches run over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him, but his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel.
And you're talking about the tribe of Israel. Often people think of Israel as just being the Jews, where in fact the real tribe of Judah has absolutely no genetic connection to the people who now call themselves Jews.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other key thing, because what they then try and say is, they say, oh, we're just the tribe of Judah. Well, they're not. The tribe of Judah are ostensibly the English, Irish, and Germans. But if they were the tribe of Judah, what happened to the other, 12 tribes? Because, of course, we went through that double blessing just then with Ephraim and Manasseh.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Manasseh became America. It's, for my mind, the problem that you have is that you've got the tribe of Judah, and then you've got the area of Judea, the land of Judea, and then you get Judean, and these were all grouped in together. So sometimes they call someone from the tribe of Judah a Jew, and they were called a Jew incorrectly. They were a Judahite. And then they call someone from Judea a Jew, and they might have been a Jew, or they might have been someone from the tribe of Israel still, you see, because unlike today, when, you know, if I just, if I was born here 20 years ago and I'd arrived, my parents had arrived from Africa, I could still call myself an Englishman. We tend to attribute a place of someone's birth to their race. And so you'd say, oh, Judean, or Jew, but a Judean could be a Jew living in Judea, or it could be any other race living in Judea, you see.
Sure, sure.
But people try and apply, they say it was all just individual races living in those lands then, but that's not the case. And you see, this is how they've corrupted the text of the Bible, and they've done it over a period of time. And I still don't think that the King James is an accurate text.
No, I don't either.
But it was one of those things that I went with it because it's the most popular, I could find problems in others as well. So if you put a book like that together and it became more of a challenge, and say you used a Bible more like the Farrar Fenton, which is something that, you know, I prefer, or Smith and Goodspeed or something like that, then people would say, oh, well, you've come up with these judgments because you're using the wrong Bible, you see.
Sure.
But if you can use the most common Bible and then still get it out of the most common Bible, then I think that you're on stronger ground.
Sure.
But it's always difficult to talk about In the Name of Yahweh, because I'm not really a theologian. It was putting that book together was I think it's about 50,000 words. So it was a similar size to the original Synagogue of Satan, but it was far more work to do, because there was a lot for me to understand, to put together. Unfortunately, I had a couple of people that I was dealing with at the time, who were, you know, scholars in this field for 20, 30, 40 years in some cases. And so when I ran up against the problem, they would help me out. And the way I did it, Deanna, was I got a Bible, a chronological Bible, and I read it through two or three times. That took me several weeks. And then I had an idea of what I was going to use to tell the story, which was basically to prove the white race of the Israel of the Bible, the Jews and the children of Satan. I wanted all the laws in there so you could see the 759 laws, statutes, ordinances, and the judgments that you get for breaking those. They were in there. And then tell you what happened, you know, going through Jesus Christ time. And I was able to tell that story, and I've sent this book to, you know, theologians out there who've written books that I found useful, but I found they went on too long, if you see what I mean. What I was trying to do with this book was, it's such an important subject to show people their identity that you want to do it in the simplest way possible. And whenever I've done a book, I've got a couple of expensive big dictionaries, but whenever I do a book and I have to look up a word, I only use one of the little pocket dictionaries, the smallest one you can buy, because I want everyone to understand what I'm saying. I don't want people to have to reach for a dictionary while they're reading the book, you see.
Sure.
And so I want to make it accessible to most people out there. And this book was just, because of the nature of the King James language, I originally was trying to go with the New King James, and then I found out that they'd tampered with that. They changed race they substituted generation for race in one part, which it shouldn't have. And they'd done things in such a way to try and distance the truth.
Sure.
And I found that out. And then, on top of that, I found out that that was actually a translation that was copyrighted, and you had to get permission from the copyright owner to use it. And there's absolutely no way that they were going to give me permission to use it. So even to the extent, I mean, I'm published out of America, but the King James Bible is free. I mean, it's 400 years old, but you still have to get copyright for it in England.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's copyrighted by Crown Copyright, and that's the government copyright. But every other nation can use it for free. But in England, you still have to apply for it. Again, I'm not going to get they're not going to grant that to me. And fortunately, my publisher was based in America, and that was discussed with them, and they said, because it's being published outside of them, being published out of America, it's therefore subject to the publishing over there. So
perfect.
I kept it in.
Now, what are your opinions? What are your views? And I've heard this before, there are several groups of people who say that Jesus Christ was Jewish, and some say no, he was not. He was a Galilean, and he was not a part of the tribe of Judah. What are your views on that?
So he was 100% not Jewish. He says.
Right, he did say that. He referred to the people who. Yeah, okay, go ahead. I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, he said basically when he said to the Jews, "Ye are of your father. I'm from above. You are from beneath. You are from your father, the devil." Now, if he was a Jew, then he'd be from the devil as well,
exactly.
Wouldn't he?
Exactly, yes.
It's basic things like that. And again, it's this tying it up of linking to the tribe of Judah or the land of Judea or what have you. But what you find in this business, what we talk about and what we've both written about, is if you've made one mistake in your book, either of your books, then some will discredit your whole work for it. And they're not looking for the right things, they're looking for the wrong things.
Sure.
They're looking to discredit. Now, fortunately, I've not really been pulled up over time, and when I went to redo the Synagogue of Satan, Update, Expand, Uncensored, apart from the, I did, you know, the Schicklgruber stuff about Hitler's father being
right.
Potentially Jewish, and I'm starting to think that that's a bit of a Jewish smokescreen, you know, mm-hmm. trying to demonise the Nazis. But do I take that out and be the only part of the book that I take out? And so I left it in there, and instead I think I atoned for that by putting the Holocaust stuff in that I didn't put in the first time, but consequently that means that I can't go to certain European countries anymore. So...
I'm
so
sorry.
I won't be going up the Eiffel Tower or anytime soon. But and it's different because people are deliberately looking to because they're frightened of what we write, and you know you've been, you know, well, we know your situation with radio. We don't need to go into any further. But
right.
The fact is that, you know, it's and
pretty
then
public.
And we just had that business that I went to with my book, and you know, if it's such a load of nonsense, and you know, then why are they so desperate to get it? Surely it's worth leaving it out there, isn't it? Because if it's such a load of nonsense, then people will read it and say this is rubbish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so pleased we read this, so we know all this anti-Semitic stuff is just a load of nonsense, but they're scared to death of it,
mm-hmm.
because it does tell the truth. And I didn't plan it that way. It was a private document that I sent to Dale Bradford Smith for him to have a look at. He put it on his site. Other people started saying how good it was. And then I didn't even know it had been up on his site until I heard a show, because it wasn't up. I don't know how it came about. I don't think I even knew he had a site. He said he had an email address on one show I wrote down. I sent it to him. And then it just grew from that. And all it was I was so sick of hearing, going back and listening to the same old Kennedy stuff and all this, that I was trying to do it in bits and pieces. So I'd spend a day looking at stuff on Kennedy, and I'll order that DVD and I'll order that book and what have you, and really piecing it together. And then, you know, you can get rid of all the mafia nonsense, and you can focus on the fact that he started printing United States notes, that and he also told David Ben-Gurion that he wasn't going to have the nuclear bomb that he knew he was trying to get hold of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are the things that... And then, funnily enough, neither of those are in the JFK film, which Oliver Stone did, who's half Jewish. You know, and again, this should be an indication to people. Some Hollywood is not going to come out and tell you what they do. You know, these people aren't very good at squealing on themselves. And so all that you can know about, you already know that the Lee Harvey Oswald story is false. If you want to know what other conspiracies are false, then you just need to watch the JFK film, because the Jews aren't going to tell you what they did. And so then you have to look at it from other angles. And this was what I did, and I built it into, and I kept it in a timeline for that, because I'd never written anything before in my life, and it was a perfect way. I wasn't going to index it, you know, I mean, I have
sure.
done it. And you know, I'm always going to know even if I sort of think of an event, I'm going to know roughly when it was. I mean, obviously, Kennedy's 63, and then you've got 9/11 and what have you. You're going to know those dates off the top of your head. But if you're going back to some Rothschild at some point, you might say, oh, yeah, I think that was Mason, so that'll be around any time from 1790 to 1815 or something. And so I'd be able to hunt through and find it. And then it just, I was encouraged to do more research, and I did more research, and suddenly it just became too big to read online. And so I put a book together and did it pretty much at cost price, you know, after the postage was so high. But I had it on my website and then printed 500 copies, and after that Tex Miles picked it up, and the rest is really history. I mean, I had a chance to update it, which I did, and now it's come back to me again. Tex Miles still sells his copy. He's legally entitled to do so until he chooses not to. But for me, the only original copy now is the updated, expanded and uncensored one, because I don't feel it's fair that people should be buying something that's been superseded. But And that's why this one's available on Kindle as well, and the other one isn't.
So. Sure. Well, I really appreciate the format that you've done this book in. I really, really endorse timelines. I think timelines are absolutely essential. Mm. And I've done a timeline for book 2 and 3, and it just provides just a roadmap of events and a connectivity of events, that this happened because that happened, and you can see how things work together. It just I'm working on another project that I'm developing a timeline for, and in developing timelines you also see the people involved. You see the politicians involved, that the politicians, well, a particular politician might have influenced several different decisions, and you think, holy cow, that's a really, you know, politicians are typically bad, but some politicians are just out and out evil. And when you develop a timeline and you can see all the things that they've been involved with, then you get a pattern.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that this is the thing, because what they try and do is they try and the media are excellent at assisting with this, because if the media are attacking a certain political party a decade ago, and then they're praising that same political party that were the worst thing on the planet only, you know, 5-10 years, shall we say, beforehand, because the media is just there to manipulate who they want to get in, which doesn't really matter because they control them all anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's so funny that, you know, it's all, this must never be forgotten, and then it's the media that forget it.
Right.
And, you know, so they try and drum it up as to be so bad, but it's all just, as we know, it's just grand theatre. And even George Bush talked about the theatre of war. I mean, what a stupid thing to say.
Right.
These people are just insane. And, you know, they're no different to kids playing on Xbox, blowing things up, but they're doing it in reality, and that gives them more of a kick, you know, because they're nuts, and their upbringing as well was probably, I remember reading, you know, this is going through the David Icke side of the so-called child abuse, you know, I think that people came out about that, didn't they, not just, obviously Kathy O'Brien was talking about her own experiences, and then there was that Bryce Taylor, that was like there was some hissy fit between the two of them, it's one of them was made up or what have you. I still find it remarkable that none of the people in the Kathy O'Brien book ever sued, because when you're accusing people with the millions like the Bush family, I would have thought that they'd be a little bit upset that they were being written about as having sex with 3-year-old girls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it... they were quite happy about it, because it increased their standing in the Jewish community, because it showed that they adhered to Talmudic principles. But to my mind, it's ludicrous how they would never have taken any action against her if there wasn't some sort of, you know, truth to it. I think if I was accused of having sex with 3-year-old girls and what have you, then I would look to be taking a case. Whatever, I'd get a cheap lawyer and I'd do it, you know. I wouldn't have that.
Unless it would bring more attention to
Well, exactly. That's sure. that's my exact point. So what I'm saying is, I believe it happened. I believe that these people, whether they're Jewish or not, there's clearly, we go all the way back to Woodrow Wilson's time, and he didn't even have sexual relations with the woman that he dragged the country into war over in case he was exposed for sending her a couple of letters, that the Jews got hold of. But now you look at the depravity that this nation is in. You know, if someone is having affairs with women and they're still in the White House and what have you, I mean, it was pretty much known in the 60s itself that Kennedy was with Marilyn Monroe and he was with this other woman and what have you. And people sort of thought, well, we've got a young, vibrant, virile president, you know?
Sure.
And we respect that, you know? We think it's good. It's like having one of the Beatles as president, you know? And I think that was the general feeling. You know, we've got some, and so yeah, if he wants to go out there and do what we'd all like to do, Marilyn Monroe and what have you, then good on him. But my point being is that we're talking about he was assassinated, 50 years ago now, and what sort of that wasn't frowned upon then. So what was frowned upon then? Homosexuality, pedophilia, all those sort of things. And I think absolutely, if they're not, they're guaranteed in the system one way or another. And as far as I'm concerned, all these people of any consequence, they'll have something on them. Even if they haven't out and out gone with an 8-9-year-old girl, they might have been seduced by someone, all on video. Oh, she's 14, not 16, like you thought, you know.
Sure.
And that's it for your career, unless you do what we say. And this is what I believe honestly goes on. Yeah, we had a situation in Britain, which I found very interesting, because this was when we had the banking collapse and suddenly we had all the bailouts like you had in America. What we had in the UK Parliament was suddenly all these stories about MPs and their expenses and how they were milking their expenses and all this. And what I think had happened there is I think that the MPs, a significant number of them, said, no, we're not bailing banks out. They're just going to have to crash. And, you know, people have to keep their houses and what have you. It'll just have to go into... And so the Jews went into panic, and they started getting their media to print all these stories to get the people against the government. To get the people against the politicians about their expense claims.
Right.
And then suddenly we're bailing out all the banks. Because they probably said, right, this is stage one, this is expense claims. The next thing that's going in our media is sexual impropriety.
Right.
And that's the way I think that it worked. And so they backed off on the expense claim business because they didn't want any more dirt getting out about them.
Sure.
It's a strange world we live in. And did you see that clip of Joan Rivers talking about Obama?
I heard about that, and of course we had heard about his sexual preferences before, and in fact, what was it, Larry Sinclair, I think that was his name, was talking about Obama, that he picked him up in a cab, or he was with him in a taxi, and when Obama was still a senator, or maybe even before he was a senator,
it's pretty sick. Well, no, this story, the Joan Rivers, it was recently.
Right, just in the last day or two. And she was saying that Michelle Obama is a tranny, I guess is a transvestite.
She actually, they said to her, they said, what? She said, transgender. Sex changing, but the point is this clip goes on for about, I think they're speaking for literally 20-30 seconds max, and she's good at, like, she'll come out with a big Jewish mouth, over accentuating everything, but in this clip it's like she's a bit annoyed that she's been stopped anyway, because originally they ask her what she'd been doing that day is she'd been officiating a wedding for a couple of gays. So, I mean, she's like some so-called comedienne, so I don't know. She's presumably got some license to practice weddings now, but that's what she was doing between two gay people. And they said, oh, I enjoy that, she said. And then they said, so how long do you think it'll be before we get a gay person in the White House? She said, we already have, dear, Obama. And his wife's and he's married to a tranny, I think she said. They said, what? Mm-hmm. A tranny, transgender, you know, sex change. And then she goes, everybody knows that. And it's the way she says it, and this reporter's like sort of backing off, like nervously laughing, like, I shouldn't be getting this. And she just walks in, you know, they're filming her coming out of a car, walking into somewhere. But she's not stopping and really trying to make a big joke about it. She's sort of saying it off the cuff, like she's annoyed that there's been reporters waiting for her when she got out of her car. She'd rather be left alone. And I just thought, because, you know, with these clips, you've got to be careful, because you desperately want someone to confirm what you believe.
Sure.
And it's dangerous when someone says something to oh, I've got it now, I've nailed it now, this proves it, and then put it out there. But I do honestly think that this clip is worth watching for people. I put it up on my I always say this, if people have Facebook or Twitter, then they're welcome to invite me as a friend, ask to be a friend or whatever. I think that's how they do it. But mm-hmm. I don't advocate them getting accounts to follow me, because these things are, I've even got a big banner across the top of my site saying Facebook and Twitter, they're watching us all. So if you've already got it, then I wouldn't worry, because they know exactly what you're up to. But that's if you want to see the posts I try and put out each day and what have you. And that's where I post things generally. But with something like that, if you just put in Obama, Joan Rivers says Obama and transgender and all this sort of stuff, then the thing will come up, and it really is worth looking at. But,
right. A friend sent me a clip this morning, so I will watch it. The other thing, too, about 6 months ago, somebody also made the claim that Michelle Obama was a man, and they showed her in a dress that had a suspicious...
I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. In the pelvic area.
Yeah.
Kind of a suspicious bulge that shouldn't have been there. But the other thing, too, and I've always said this, because on the picture of Vogue, that Michelle Obama was on the front cover of Vogue, she was in a pink dress. She looked very, very delicate, very feminine.
Yeah.
In other photos that I've seen, she looks very, excuse me, very mannish, very not feminine at all. I think that there, I know this sounds crazy, but I think there's more than one Michelle. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but there's just, it's just different. She appears, well, sometimes she's got this big butt. And other times she looks very trim and thin. Maybe has a dieting issue. Maybe she's, I don't know. But, photoshopped.
Well, you remember all the different Bin Ladens. I think there were a load of them.
Yeah.
You know, they had different noses and different shaped faces and all sorts of stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, they do these things, but they don't do them very well. You know, this has always been their problem. I mean, it's like they do the hard work and then they film someone on BBC saying that the South Tower's just come down when it stood up in front, behind them, you know,
sure.
on the live feed. So, you know, that's a bit of the script going out of sync there.
Building 7. Yeah, Building 7. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So my point being that that's always been their problem. They're so cocky. They think that because they've got control of everything, that we control the media, we control the banks, we control the governments, we control everything now, so we can just get away with it. But the internet is waking people up, and it's one of the only tools left, which is why they want to close it down. And they're just, their arrogance is just unbelievable, because when they get to a story that has so many holes in it that they can't, they've lost control of it. It was so badly, again showing how stupid they are, it was so badly put together in the first place. I mean, why on earth would you even allow would you not go through the scripts with someone beforehand, a Holocaust survivor saying, oh, when a Hungarian Jew was burned, green smoke came out the chimney, and when a Polish Jew was burned, it was yellow smoke came. And this is exact testimony. And this is the sort of stuff that they have written a law that you can't criticise. I mean, this is how mad they are. And because they let all these idiots go out there because they didn't know what they were doing, you know, I could have organised some propaganda campaign better and be say, right, okay, what are we going to say? Let's get scientists on each of these issues. Is this possible? Yes or no? And then that's how you go with it, surely. But these people, it was just like people completely inexperienced in what they were talking about. Like they never thought that people might investigate the so-called gas chambers. They just thought, oh, we'll tell them and that'll be enough because we control the media. And so as soon as people start to question and people start to look at it, actual academics with sense, they're like, oh my God, what do we do? Oh, I know. We'll make a law saying that you, if you criticise anything of what we've said, then we'll jail you for up to 5 years. I mean, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? It's just pure oppression. It's Jewish oppression. And it's based upon a story that they use to make out they're so persecuted all the time and the white race are so oppressive, and that's why they're so keen to persecute the white race for questioning a historical event.
Right. Wow. Well, we have certainly covered a lot of very interesting issues today.
Yeah.
And I know you've been on some other programs recently. And have also covered well similar issues, today I think this is a fabulous. You've just presented so many ideas. Gosh,
it's been, I don't know, it's one of those days. I mean, I've never been someone that really looks forward to doing shows, but sometimes it just flows. I think I've opened the book a couple of times. Sometimes it flows and sometimes my mind goes a bit blank, you know. But you're a great host, Deanna, and it's always a pleasure doing the show with you. It's just one of those lucky times, I guess. I hope that the listeners got something out of it as well. I'm sure they did.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm just it's just been wonderful chatting with you. Just wonderful. And let me read a couple of comments in from the chat room. Someone says, not crazy at all, Deanna. Clones have abound for years now. And this person says, Michael became Michelle in 1983 at Johns Hopkins. And I think, they have been doing that. We read all the time. We've seen pictures of people who have decided to become, change their sex. And, in fact, I was watching a program the other night on television about somebody. Since I've been kind of interested lately in psychopaths, this one program was, it's called I Dated a Psychopath. And this woman actually moved in with somebody that would go out to the gym, I think it was every Thursday night, and take his gym bag and all that stuff. And one time she had an occasion to look into his gym bag because, well, she was just kind of curious about something or trying to find a key or something, and found these women's panties and some other garments. And she just naturally assumed that he was fooling around. And so she decided that she was going to follow him to see where he went. And he went to a nightclub. And turns out that he was dressing up as a woman. And she was absolutely shocked. Absolutely shocked. And he then went on to become a woman, and they became good friends. And I'm thinking, it's so bizarre. It's something that I would never think to do. Normal people wouldn't think to do these kinds of things. They just wouldn't dream of doing these kinds of things.
Exactly. But this is the trouble. I mean, this is how mad things have gone. You know, what I can't believe is you get this situation and they say, I'm a woman trapped in a man's body. I can't believe that people actually believe this nonsense. You know, these people are ill. They need to be helped. What they don't need is to have all their private parts messed about with, cut up by some surgeon. They need to have some sort of psychiatric treatment to remind them that, no, they are a man, actually, and that by nature they were born a certain way, and by messing about down there and giving them implants up, you know, the whole thing, and then electrolysis and hormones to make hair fall out and whatever they do. I mean, all these chemicals, all these things that they're passing into their bodies, I wonder how long these people actually do spend the rest of their life as a woman and when they actually die, because they're tampering around with drugs and they're cutting you up, and it's just horrible. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, anyone that carries out this sort of operation is a ghoul. You know, it's you're in no way doing anything to benefit someone. You're just carrying out their mental illness on them, in my opinion. You know, you're not helping them. It's appalling to me, and it should be to most people. You know, I had surgery when I was younger. I was born with a cleft lip, and I had to have a couple of operations, and it was tough. You know, And I have problems with my ears as a result and all sorts of stuff. So I'm no stranger to going in and out of hospitals from a young age when it can be quite frightening. And I think I've had several operations in my life. And so I'm familiar with the medical establishment. And the last thing that you want to do in life is to have an operation. But I had to go through them, and, you know, I'm okay now. Everything's been repaired and what have you. But it's not a pleasant experience. And I don't know what these people are thinking. You know, it's just boggles the mind, unfortunately. So.
Right. And when somebody sent me that photo or the video or whatever about 6 months ago making that claim, I thought, oh, that just can't be. That just, I know the dress, you know, I see what I see, but since we wouldn't do it, we wouldn't engage in such behavior, it makes it very difficult. We're very skeptical when these ideas are presented to us, but honestly, there are people that really are psychotic enough or demented enough that they would allow themselves to do that.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yes. It's very, you know, part of me feels sorry for them. But at the same time, I think to myself, you know, you should seek out morality elsewhere.
Right.
You know what I mean? Don't expect it always to pander to you. You know, maybe read the Bible. You know, maybe read other things. I mean, you know, I don't think that there'd be something in the Quran, for example, that excuses that sort of behaviour. Now, you know, I'm not advocating people do that. I'm just saying that we live in a world now which anything goes till the whistle blows. That's basically the slogan for the world.
Sure.
And all that that's creating is that the best thing that could ever happen to you in the world is to get the most attractive sexual partner you can, have sex with them, and then that's it. That's the world in a nutshell. That's really what they say everything is to aim for. That's the ultimate thing for them now. Nothing about getting knowledge or anything else. It's all about everything is sold sexually. They even sell cars sexually. I mean, you know, the way they do the advertising and what have you. And it's just such a, I think this could probably be equal to Lot's time, you know, Sodom and Eve.
Oh, yes, yes.
So, I think that you'll see parallels with this. And I sometimes think to myself what this age is going to be called. Oh, I think we're about to get cut off.
Yeah, we are running out of time. Yes, you did bring up Lot's time, and we read about that in the Bible. And, it's happening now. It definitely is. Oh, my gosh. Well, it certainly has been a pleasure to have you on the program, and I hope that people will purchase your book. We hardly even talked about your book, but I hope that people will purchase your book. It's a wonderful book, and it is The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored. You can purchase that book at Amazon. It won't be in the top sellers at Amazon, but you go ahead and purchase it anyway. Right?
Absolutely. Or they can go on to direct to my publisher at www.andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. They can click through to Amazon on my site on there anyway, to the pages. They're on the left and right hand side respectively, or they can buy direct from the publisher. They just need to check the what's the best price for them, etc. Sometimes one's cheaper than the other.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Andy, and we'll talk again. Thank you.
Thanks, Deanna. Bye-bye.
Okay,
now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you again soon.